Again, the next case is In Re Interest of Brianna. You may proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. If it may please the court, counsel, I am Joe Abler, Antelope County Attorney, and I am here on behalf of the state of Nebraska and the appellant in this matter. This is the case of In the Interest of Brianna L. Some brief procedural background. I think it's fairly clear in the record, but juvenile petition was filed February 18, 2015. Along about that time as well, affidavit and a motion was filed by the state for an ex parte temporary custody order and removal of the juvenile. That was granted. Continuing on with the case, and I don't want to spend a lot of time with the discovery argument, that's in the brief, but I think relevant factually here, the lower court on April 1st, 2015, on the appellee's motion at a hearing, granted the parent's discovery pursuant to 1912, using 1912 as a guidepost. No reciprocal was granted by the court. The state later, April 10th, filed a motion for reconsideration, which was then conceded by the parents. The parents said, the court, you don't have jurisdiction to order discovery order like you did. So that order was rescinded. That starts, in a sense, the discovery issues that the state has raised in its brief. I don't want to argue that as much as I do the main reason for the appeal.
What is your assignment of error?
My assignment of error is the court's granting the parent of the appellee's father's motion for the release of confidential records of the juvenile pursuant to 43-3001.
Did you set that out in your brief?
I did.
Where?
I may have just a moment. Basically, in the argument, the table of contents under Roman numeral 2, and again in the brief, it was argued as part of the discovery issue, but also that there's no statutory provisions granting discovery in a juvenile court proceedings, and 43-3001 in the Nebraska Juvenile Code does not create a means of discovery.
But our rules require that an assignment of error be a separate, concise statement of what you're appealing. And I don't find that in your brief at all.
Well, I guess I would, at this time, I would concede that.
So let's talk about the petition that was filed. The petition that was filed alleged that the child was in danger because of acts of the father.
Yes. You
agree with that?
I would agree with that.
And then there's also an action against the mother saying that the mother did not protect the child.
That is correct.
Right. Then, at some point, you moved to dismiss the allegations against the father.
That is correct, John.
If that's true, if those are being dismissed, what does the mother have to protect the child from?
Your Honor, I guess to answer that question, I'd have to back up a little bit. And I guess, in a sense, provide facts that are not necessarily in the record.
Can't do that.
Okay.
That's part of my problem, too.
Okay. And I guess I would advise the court that in putting together this record is very difficult when you have a juvenile case pending and you also have a sister criminal case that basically...
The court didn't grant your motion, did it?
The motion for...
Dismiss the allegations against the father.
The court did. It was dismissed.
Where is that appear at?
That would have been at the hearing on November 4th. I don't have the journal entry right in front of me, but it would be in the record for the same hearing during which the mother entered the no contest plea to the allegations against her.
I couldn't find it, but I will go back and look and hope I missed it.
I hope so too, Your Honor, to be honest with you.
Now let's talk about the... This is not a discovery issue, in my opinion. This is simply whether or not you comply with the juvenile code 43-3001. Okay?
Okay.
So under 30-3001, in any judicial proceedings concerning a child who is currently or who may become at the conclusion of the proceeding a ward of the court, that's our situation here, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Or under the supervision of the court, an order may be issued which identifies individuals and agencies who shall be allowed to receive otherwise confidential information concerning the child for legitimate and official purposes. And then it gives you a list of who those people are.
Absolutely.
Parents aren't even there, are they?
The parents actually are listed down farther in subsection 2.
Yeah, but they're not in that. They're not under that section, are they?
Not under that section. You're correct.
But the parent's attorney is there.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So, when the judge finds that there is legitimate and official purposes for the parents to have this information, do you think that complies with that statute?
I do not.
And why?
Why? And that's just it. I guess part of the argument is, also in the appellee's brief, is it only makes sense if the parent's attorney has it. It doesn't make sense to not allow that attorney to share that with the parent. And I guess, Your Honor, to touch on this, the 43-3001, I think there's two significant provisions. You brought up one, the legitimate and official purpose.
Let's stay with that for right now until we get our way through that one.
Okay.
So it says that the attorney can have it. Do you think that the court could order the attorney that they would be able to like to look at it but not show it to the parents?
I guess I would argue if the court would find a legitimate and official purpose, and I am...
She says there was an official and legitimate purpose.
She did.
For the attorney and the parents to have this information.
She did. And basically, I'm asking the court today, with a de novo review of the record, that record lacks any evidence of an official, legitimate and official purpose, other than, it kind of dovetails again into, way of getting discovery of confidential records that they wouldn't necessarily be entitled to.
Isn't the problem here that the father has not been adjudicated? The child has not been adjudicated because of anything that the father did. The father's rights have not been terminated. The father is entitled to know what their child is doing. There's nothing that was presented at the time of the hearing to show that there were even criminal charges filed against him, were there?
Yes, there was, Your Honor.
What was filed? What evidence was offered to establish that?
There was an exhibit on the record, and I don't know if it was on that actual hearing, but a previous hearing before the court.
You think the judge can do that?
If the judge can consider...
Do you think we can consider?
Exhibits that have been offered on the record?
In a prior hearing. Did anybody ask the judge to take judicial notice of the exhibits that have been offered in a prior hearing?
I guess I do not recall if I actually asked her to take judicial notice of that.
And if the judge didn't take judicial notice of that, how are we supposed to take judicial notice of that?
I see your point. I guess basically, a legitimate official purpose.
So don't they have doesn't the attorney have a legitimate purpose to know what's going to be happening to this child?
Absolutely. I would say the attorney does, yes.
Okay. Now let's go to the next part. The other part says that the court shall in writing, if that is in the best interest of the juvenile, that this information be given to other people. And the parents would be included in that list, wouldn't they?
Yes.
But there was no written document by the judge in this case, was there, that says that it's in the best interest of the juvenile that the parents be given copies of this information?
There was not a specific finding of it being in the best interest of the juvenile. However, my reading of the judge's order, it granted the parents' attorney access to these records and ordered the state to produce them.
Did it only grant the attorney access, or did it grant the attorney and the parent, dad?
I do not specifically recall, and if I may have just a moment.
Because if the order only granted it to the attorney under subpart 2 and did not specifically name authorization to disclose to the father under subpart 3, the attorney would not be permitted to share that. Would that be correct?
That would be correct. I apologize for not having this readily available. I guess I'm looking at the record on page 190. It is not clear as to specifically the parents. It just basically sustains Mr. Temple's motion.
It actually, I think it says that the people that are entitled to the information in this order are the parents and the parents' attorneys.
And if that's what is, I'm not going to contest the record, I would say that would be correct. I see that I'm out of time, and I know there's a lot of questions. I haven't even got into any of my argument.
Do you have more questions? No. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, counsel, Mr. Abler. My name is Ron Temple. I represent Daryl L., father of the juvenile, in this juvenile proceeding before this court. This case, conceitedly, is a procedural mess in the sense that the way it started out with a petition, an amendment thereto, an adjudication at a hearing which the record demonstrates neither the father was present nor the father's attorney was present, after which the child is then adjudicated and immediately, concurrently therewith, a dismissal against the father of all of the allegations amended petition.
Was it a dismissal or was it a motion to dismiss?
There's a dismissal without prejudice, I believe, in the transcript.
But I tell you, it says it's a motion to dismiss.
The document
filed by the state.
The document I'm looking at, Judge, is a document filed.
I know what it says, but do you read what
November 5, 2015.
I know what it says in the heading, but do you read the language?
I do read the language, and I'm aware of that issue, Your Honor, in the sense that it appears to be a motion, but in the title it appears to be a dismissal. And of course, then we get into the difference statutory as to whether or not a party has the authority to dismiss without leave of court, and that is a procedural problem that I also recognize, Your Honor.
The language in the dismissal without prejudice doesn't say the case is dismissed, does it?
It does not say.
It moves for the dismissal without prejudice.
The language is moves, correct.
And was that ever granted by the court?
I'm not aware of any order entered by the court granting the motion, but I will confess for the benefit of the court that the case proceeded as though it was dismissed against the father, and the father acted accordingly during the rest of the proceeding after November of 2015.
Do you think that makes a difference?
Practically speaking, it could, depending upon the issue before the court. But on the other hand, in this case, given the fact that the father has treated as though he was dismissed, and in fairness and candor to the court, we treated it as though.
I can tell that, but I'm not sure that, from a legal standpoint, he's dismissed out.
And I appreciate that, because unfortunately, whether it be juvenile law or civil law, we routinely see these motions, whether it be by stipulation, motion, or actual dismissal, and the court and the parties are caught in the unenviable position of deciding whether it's a dismissal without an order or whether an order is needed to accomplish that dismissal. Most importantly, Your Honor, in my opinion, that we have a jurisdictional issue here that must be decided prior to getting to the merits of the motion of 43-3001. And that being the second tier of a final order is the only available vehicle by which this issue ever gets to this court, Concededly, it's a special proceeding under Nebraska law. But when you look at the posture of this case, it is a real stretch to ever suggest that this is a substantial right in the sense that the state lost the ability to defend itself by virtue of an order requiring the production of these documents to the parent's attorney and the parents themselves.
Does the state stand in the position of the parent in this case?
The state stands in the position of the parent in the sense that the state has been granted the temporary care, custody, and control of the minor child.
And therefore,
their independency in this case.
And therefore, I'm just asking what you think, therefore, because of that, do they have the right to protect the interests of the juvenile?
Absolutely, they have the right to protect the interests of the juvenile. However, the issue at this in this hearing that is presently before the court goes not to the ability of the state to protect the minor child, because after all, the minor child's in the care, custody, and control of the department, out of home, with adequate protections to ensure the safety of the minor child. What's really at issue is that we have the possibility that the state of Nebraska, namely the Department of Health and Human Services, and to the extent the state is complicit, failing to do their job because we have a child who is attempting suicide now on the second time in the care, custody, and control of the department, for which neither the father nor the mother is told nor made aware of, and in fact the department admits under sworn testimony that there's a concerted effort to keep the information from the parents.
Was there also testimony at that time and a direction by the court that the department shall update their records to include the information as to the second suicide attempt and file that report with the court within 10 days?
I believe there was an order from the court directing the department to update the case plan court report and requiring the production of information relating to this.
Okay. With that in mind, that was within 10 days?
Correct.
Okay. So with that in mind, can you tell me what is the best evidence you have that this information should be released to you for legitimate and official purposes as the attorney for the parents?
The best evidence I have is the neglect of the department in providing the information in the case plan court report in itself, for example.
Well, but that report was from December prior to the incident.
I would agree with that, but the case plan court report lacked detailed information, had a permanency objective that wasn't even possible under the circumstances, that could not be defended and conceitedly could not be defended. The concern of the parents is that the department, given the fact that there's a concerted effort, an admitted concerted effort to keep information from the parents, one cannot assume that they will now honor the court's directive to include that information in the case plan when they conceitedly won't do it.
Excuse me, counsel. I understand that argument. I'm with you 100% on that. But you also cannot assume they won't.
Under the circumstances, I could assume they would not, given the testimony.
My dad used to tell me a long time ago, if you assume things, it can make something out of you and me.
I'm with you, Your Honor.
So my point is that the court ordered that the report be filed within 10 days. Now, if that report was not adequate, I would understand why you would file a motion asking for additional information, that you needed that. But I don't understand why you need that before the report is filed.
Because the procedure and the process up to that point was such that the parents could not have confidence in the state to comply with court orders. And because of that, the only choice that was left for these parents under the circumstances was to go get the records so there could be an assurance that these parents knew in fact what the situation was rather than a basic summary.
If the state was concerned about the father and mother having access to this report, would it not have been possible for the reports to have been given to the court and the court to review the reports and then make that information available to you that you felt was necessary?
Absolutely.
And if that's the case, then again, under what legitimate purpose do you need them now without that happening?
Well, I'm not aware of any requirement, statutory or otherwise, that there needs to be an in-camera review of these documents before the parent's attorney should be afforded access, especially with a parent whose parental rights are intact completely, like the father's.
But there is a presumption from the information circumstantially throughout these proceedings that the father may have contributed to the daughter's instability.
And that's an absolute unfair and unwarranted presumption.
I didn't say it was a presumption. I said they may have.
It's an absolute unfair, unwarranted and unfair determination or inclination of anything of the like under the circumstances as we found them, Your Honor.
Then the next thing is the parents were also granted the authority to get this information. You think the parents are included in the list of people that are listed in the statute?
I believe the way the judge, and I intend to answer the court's question, but I believe the way the judge analyzed this statute, it included the parents in the top part of the statute. And upon closer examination of that statute, I think a fair reading of it is exactly that the top portion of that statute includes the laundry list of people and then anyone else who should be afforded access under the last sentence. And the parents, concededly, are not in the top part and can only be included by virtue of an order of the court in accordance with the second
and
part.
The court has to specifically find that it's in the best interest of the juvenile for the parents to get this information in a written form.
That's correct? Absolutely correct.
And that didn't happen here.
It did not happen.
What does that do to us?
What the court is left with is doing one of two things, either finding the equivalent of a harmless error analysis and or a cautionary instruction to courts to make that specific finding, or the court is left with the determination that the court needs to remand the matter for a specific determination as to that issue. But nonetheless, the court still has to decide the jurisdictional issue, which I believe disposes of this appeal, and this court should dismiss this appeal or in the alternative affirm the decision of the trial court. Thank you.
Thank you. I have one more question to ask. Did you find any assignments of error?
I did not.
Thank you. How long did we allow Mr. Temple to go? A minute 29. Would you like that minute 29, Mr. Abler?
You said you had a lot of things you wanted to say.
Giving you a chance. All right. Well, thank you both. The matter is submitted. Thank you very much. And we are adjourned. And it's picture time.